This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Coming up in this 4 o'clock hour, Joel Goldberg will be on the show. Really excited to catch up with him and talk some baseball as we are getting you ready for opening day. I do want to get to the Royals coming up in just a bit, but I want to play this audio for you guys with Jeff Passan. I don't know if many people know this or not, but baseball could be heading towards a lockout. Their television deals are about to expire, and the deal that the owners have with the players is also going to expire. And this is a very pivotal moment right now. ESPN is telling you they are not in the baseball business right now, and they want to take a significant chunk of revenue away from baseball. And I do think that we could be potentially heading closer and closer to a conversation about a salary cap. The other leagues have one. There's one in the NBA. There is one in the NFL. There is one in almost every sport that we follow. Baseball still gets to go around willy-nilly and do what they want to, and it has created a situation like the Dodgers this year that the Dodgers have just quite simply bought up the entire board. They've gone around in Monopoly and they have bought up all the properties. They got Park Place, they got Boardwalk, they got St. Charles Place, they got all the railroads. They have everything leading into this season. Jeff Passan thinks that a salary cap fight could lead to a lockout. Here's Jeff Passan.
This has a chance to be a lot darker and a lot worse than 4 years ago when we saw this same thing happening, barreling toward opening day and wondering, are we going to have baseball? And I just wonder, and I look forward to asking owners this going forward. I feel like there's positive momentum in the game right now. I feel like baseball is in a pretty good place. The pitch clock worked. ABS challenge is probably coming next year, and I really liked it this spring. You have stars up and down the sport led by the guy who is the most recognizable baseball player in at least a quarter century. And if we're taking Shohei Ohtani, what do we go back to? Ken Griffey Jr., like in his prime? Probably so. And beyond that, the amount of young talent in the game is great. You have all these good things going for you. Is it worth it? That's the question that they need to ask themselves. And that's the question that fans need to ask as well. Is it worth it to take a great era of Major League Baseball that we are in the midst of right now and absolutely torpedo it in pursuit of financial gains. There is sanity, guys, to be found in negotiation and in a non-capped system.
I do think that Passan is a little bit off on this, and I certainly wish that we were in a position to talk to Passan about this. I think that baseball has a perception problem when it comes to the money. And I think it's really hard for baseball to overcome that with the casual fan. There is a pocket of you that don't find interest in baseball because you don't feel like your team can financially compete in the sport. That is not a football problem. Everybody can financially compete in the sport. So it doesn't matter if your team is in New York. It doesn't matter if your team is in Jacksonville or Green Bay. They have set the economics of the game up where everybody can be viable where you are. You have the ability to retain your free agents. So if you're the Kansas City Chiefs and you draft Patrick Mahomes, you don't need to be worried that Patrick Mahomes, when his contract is up, that he is going to go play for the New York Giants or the Dallas Cowboys. That you have created a system that allows every team the opportunity to keep your free agents. Right now, baseball has a sport where if the Kansas City Royals or the Oakland A's or the Tampa Bay Rays draft Mike Trout, they do not have a chance of keeping him when his contract is up. That is a system to me that sounds like it should be torn down and rebuilt. It has a process where basically some of the free agents are basically blacked out to 80% of the league. When Juan Soto was just a free agent for the New York Mets and he signs a deal for $765 million, well, John Sherman bought the Royals for $1 billion. How can you buy the team for $1 billion and then you're telling me that I got to turn around and almost pay that exact same amount to acquire the rights of one player? The finances are off. I would say the two biggest problems with baseball off the field are this. Number one, it's what we're talking about with free agents. When Bryce Harper is a free agent and you're the Kansas City Royals or the Pittsburgh Pirates, you don't even need to have a conversation about it because there's a 0% chance you can go get him. You have no chance of going to get that player. All right, that's problem number one. I would say problem number two, and some of this is the owners. You have to create a salary cap ceiling. You also have to create a floor. It is a sport in which one team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, they're the only team that spends $300 million. They spend $322 million on their payroll. $322. The last place team, the Miami Marlins, they spent $47 million on their entire team. And that is in last place by almost $30 million. Miami's not trying to be competitive. So I would understand if I'm the Los Angeles Dodgers, and hey, I've done business the way that we're supposed to. We've got rich owners. We have a great television deal. We have a market that loves our team that comes out and engages with our product. Why should we be penalized because Tampa Bay doesn't want to try? Why should we be penalized because the Chicago White Sox in a major market have no interest in being competitive this upcoming season? So some of it is you got to take some of the power away from the top. You also got to force some of these teams to spend a certain amount of money. You got to, or we'll continue to be in this situation. I tell you guys this, the greatest trick that baseball owners have ever been able to pull on paying customers is that losing is in our best interest and that there's no value in winning 87 games. That there's no value of just being a good baseball team that you can come out here and you want to bring your family to and maybe we'll make the postseason and not. No, we got to lose 60. We got to win 62 games this year to even possibly give ourselves a chance. And meanwhile, all the money that we are making, I'm going to put that into my pocket. And if I want to sell the team, I can. And I'll probably sell the team for double what I bought it for. It is the most magical trick they have ever been able to pull off on its paying customers. So yes, baseball has a salary cap problem. There's no question about it. And the Dodgers are the epitome of it. The Dodgers are not playing the same game that the Minnesota Twins are playing. They're not playing the same game that the Cincinnati Reds are playing. The Dodgers spend $200 million more than the Cincinnati Reds do on their team this year. How is that a system that's equitable for anybody? How is that a system that's fair? And it gives the perception to 10 to 12 cities around the country, why bother? We don't have a chance this season. We don't have a chance. Baseball is just a cool outdoor activity. Hey, let's go out there on a buck night, maybe a dog day at the park. We'll bring our dog out there. They'll have a couple of cool giveaways. We'll go out there, but hey, we know we're not being competitive, and we are simply passing our time until football starts back with our hometown team. That is a perception that baseball is fighting. I agree with passing. I think a lot of the on-the-field changes have actually worked. I think baseball is a much better game today than it was 5 years ago. I think the pitch clock has worked. I think the game moves at a much faster, crisper pace. Baseball is a very, very enjoyable product. This is the biggest problem with the game, and it's going to have to result in some sacrifices for everybody. For everybody. The NBA has a salary cap. The players still seem to be getting paid to me. I'm looking at the star players. They seem to be doing just fine. I'm looking at the mid-level guys. I'm looking at a guy like Christian Brown. Christian Brown is going to make like $200 million in his life playing basketball. It seems like their system works to me, even with the salary cap. This is what baseball needs. Baseball, if you want to continue to grow, part of it has to be a perception that makes all the teams viable, and not just the teams that are in the major markets. Not just Philadelphia and New York and Los Angeles and Chicago, not just those teams, but also a system that makes Pittsburgh viable and makes Oakland or Las Vegas or wherever they're going to be, that makes Tampa Bay, that makes Miami and Colorado, that makes those teams in those cities, that makes them an equal partner in this thing. Because if you're looking at the finances of the game, they are not an equal partner at all. And how you have a system where the average payroll is 156 and you are allowing a team to spend $100 million less than that, and there's also a team that is allowed to spend double than what the amount of the average is a major problem that the sport has. We got Joel Goldberg coming up in just a bit. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to continue get you ready for opening day. Joel Goldberg joins us on the show today. Joel, happy to have you on the show, man. We appreciate you.
CDOT, time to come out of hibernation. What's going on?
I'm doing great, man. Let's start with this. Where are you at on sauerkraut? I'm giving it a thumbs down. Rob is giving it a thumbs up. Where are you at with sauerkraut? Do you put it on your Polish sausage or on your hot dogs?
I'm putting it somewhere beyond where you went. Two thumbs down.
Are you a relish person?
I love relish. You know, I'm a Chicago guy. I mean, we moved to Chicago when I was 13. I would like to say I'm an expert because I worked at a hot dog place in the town I grew up in through all of high school. And then when I came home from college, I would work there. So I have 8 years of putting all the fixings on a Chicago-style dog. And mine is mustard, relish, onion, could go grilled onion on that. And then pickle, I don't mind pickle on there. Celery salt's a Chicago thing. I love that. And the hot sport peppers.
I will say this about onions. There's no food that, like, if I could tell 15-year-old me, hey, you're going to love this when you're an adult, I never would have guessed onion. It was just one of those things that kid, like, ooh, I hate onions. Now, yeah. You know what? I love onions. I love the crunch. I love the taste of it. Give me an onion.
Yeah, and then a grilled onion on that hot dog or a Polish sausage is amazing. I always liked onions. The one that I got later in life, to not get too far off topic, was asparagus. I thought that was the most disgusting thing ever. Now, like the last 10 years, I like it.
Right now, we're talking to Joel Goldberg, just getting his thoughts on baseball and food. That's, you know, two things we can always talk about on this show. Joel, yeah. Before we talk about this year's team, tell us about your first opening day. What was your first experience interviewing a player after opening day?
Oh, boy. I don't remember. I just remember in 08 here. I don't remember who my guest was that game. I should go back and look it up. I just remember that the Royals were up in Detroit. It was 08. And I think they swept them. And it was just like they weren't supposed to be that good that year. And you had a little bit of that like, hey, maybe they will be good. And it was only three games. So I don't know. I don't remember who I interviewed. If it was – I mean, I remember a lot of the people that were in the lineup, David DeJesus and Billy Butler and I think Mark Tian and – and some, you know, names that you might not remember, like Ross Glode was probably in there and John Buck. But I don't remember who I interviewed. And of course, I don't remember who I interviewed last year's opening day either. So I don't know what that says about me.
I feel like everybody's opening day is one of the teams in the American League Central. Like my first Royals game was a Royals and Twins game. So if you have an opening day memory, it's probably about Cleveland, Chicago, Minnesota, Detroit, one of those teams. They always play them on opening day.
Totally. And, you know, in part, I think they do a lot of those division games out of the gate because you know that with weather and different things going on, you got the chance to make up more later. Or I don't know. I mean, it'd be fun to see, you know, some National League or team you don't see too much come in. But the thing, I kind of like getting some of the division games out of the way now. There are less of them. It's, you know, it's 13 of them instead of 19, but it's still a lot. Versus, like, the one thing I hate is, when you face, it's not necessarily opening day, but when you face, say, the Mariners in April, and then maybe you see them in September, and it's like, you know, you see them so infrequently that if you see, and then if it's a National League team, like if you were to see the Phillies this week, you'd never see them again until next year. So in some ways, I don't mind the division rivalry, but you're right. I mean, it's like, feels like every year of late, it's been like the White Sox or Cleveland or Minnesota.
So, Joel, let's start with this about this year's team. And I imagine you talk to people that come up to you at the grocery store and they say, hey, how did this offseason go? And they maybe didn't keep up with it. They had their own stuff going on, football, whatever it is. How would you describe this offseason to a casual who is going to watch and keep up with the Royals for the first time tomorrow?
The very simple way I would describe it is they did everything they wanted to do. They checked every box they wanted to check except for one, which was finding, you know, one more power hitter, preferably a, you know, corner outfielder. And when they fell short on that one, not for lack of effort, they just took that money and instead of investing it in something that maybe they didn't want at that spot, they invested it in a closer and made their bullpen even better. They, to go a little bit deeper, they got the leadoff man that they wanted. They reinforced the rotation, which was absolutely needed to keep where they were at, having traded away Brady Singer for Jonathan India. And they went out there, and so they took care of the rotation, and then they upped that bullpen. And I think the last piece, Carrington, which is more recent, is that they're adding, to me it seems like, some of these little finishing pieces early instead of late. Meaning, let's just say that Vinny Pasquantino can't play first tomorrow. And I don't know the answer to that yet, but I suspect that if things go okay, he's going to end up DHing. So who's your first baseman? It's probably Mark Canha, who they got last week from Milwaukee, a guy that's been around a long time, a little over a week ago or whatever. So I think that they've gone out there and they've found some little experienced pieces, and suddenly this young team, I mean, look, this is Bobby Witt Jr., and they got a lot of young guys. But suddenly this young team has a lot of proven veterans that there were no guarantees they would be here this year, from Michael Wacha to Michael Lorenzen, now going out and getting a Mark Canha. And so there's a lot of been there before, done that, which is what they went out and got with the Tommy Pham's of the world at the end of last year.
Right now we're talking to Joel Goldberg, talking about this year's Kansas City Royals. I made this point earlier in the week that I think this season comes down to Vinny Pasquantino and Seth Lugo. If Vinny takes that next step, and it looks like he was on the path before the injury happens, if we're talking about Vinny being a guy that hits 26 home runs and has 110 RBIs, what does that mean for the Royals? And looking at Seth Lugo, last year is an anomaly for him. That was him putting it together, having a career year. Was that just a one-off, or can he replicate his success? If he replicates that with Cole Reagans, and you mentioned the other moves that they made in the bullpen, this is going to be one of the better rotations and staffs in the American League.
Agreed. And, let's talk about both of those, because I don't know how to evaluate Seth Lugo's situation, because all of the years of experience he has were in the bullpen. And it's now been 2 years in a rotation. I mean, the Royals were interested, if I remember and understood it correctly, they weren't ready to take a chance on that yet. They were interested. So he proved himself in San Diego. So a guy that's in his 30s, you might say, well, is that – to find that where he did at that age, is that a fluke? But it's really his second full year of starting. And so there's not as much mileage on that arm. And maybe, possibly, this is just somebody should have found this earlier. He always wanted to start. The Mets didn't put him in that role. He fit somewhere else for them. And maybe this is more like a 27 or 28-year-old. That would be the hope for me. And look, if he's not as good as last year, but he's still very good in your rotation, then you should feel pretty happy about that. So I think this one's different, because I don't think there are a lot of pitchers in history that have sort of made this. You've seen a lot of guys maybe that were starters that went to bullpen, but how many guys do you see that were bullpen pieces for years that suddenly go to starter? So I think this is an unknown, but it's certainly a reasonable question. I think in Vinny's case, you should expect more. I'm sure he does. We're not talking about a 32 or 33-year-old player here. I mean, I suppose you could ask a question, too, is what Salvi did at 34 sustainable? And it might be, with how refreshed he is with Freddie Freeman behind the plate and, playing for a winner. But I think that if Vinny's healthy, and I'm not talking about the hamstring or anything. I mean, there's no – last year's injury in September was a fluke. I think most of us would agree that if he doesn't get hurt and probably rush back, which anybody would, to find a way to help somehow in the playoffs, but don't you sit there and wonder what a Royals playoff team would have looked like last year with a healthy Vinny Pasquantino that was knocking on the door to give the Royals 3 100 RBI guys. He fell, I think, just short. I think he was at 98. So there's no reason why he shouldn't progress, and so I would expect that he will. I think the other question, and I wouldn't even call it the elephant in the room. The Royals have talked about it, and MJ knows about it, is can MJ turn the corner? Is this the year? Because we're getting to a point now where, he's been here long enough, and it's taken other players, big-time players like him, this long to figure it out. I know it's talked about a lot that he changed his stance and simplified some things with a very complicated swing, and, can that now translate into everyday games? Because I believe right now, and this is why he's the X factor to me, if MJ Melendez becomes the player that he expects and that they hope and expect, then they found that hitter that they didn't get in the offseason. If he doesn't, then they got to find somebody else and figure it out as the season goes along. And I think for MJ right now, he'll get every opportunity to do this. But we're at a point now, I think back to, remember in Ned Yost's early days, he would just play guys, whether they were struggling or not, young guys, because what did you have to lose? Now, and then when they got better and it got to 14 and 15, it was like, you got to be good enough to be in there. The Royals are at that point right now. And when you look at some of the players that didn't make this roster that went back to the minor leagues, those are guys that were were locks for a team like this, not like this, but for a Royals team in the past. And now it's like, you know, they might go with the veteran that has more experience in that role. And so that's, I think, what is staring MJ in the face right now, is that if he's producing at the level that he believes he should, and that most of us think that he should, he's going to play regularly. If he's not, they've got to figure out who the right person is out there. But if he does, that might be your answer.
Yeah, I kind of look at MJ, and I look at Mikel Garcia. I also look at Kyle Isbell, MJ Melendez, Michael Massey. I kind of feel like they're all in that same vein where in 14 and 15, especially in 15, how the Royals won the World Series were they got so many of their guys to play their best baseball all at the right time. Hosmer was great that year. Salvi was great that year. Mike Moustakas was great. Like, you got all of these guys, and then you add a Ben Zobrist. I kind of think this team, you look at guys who you think are going to be there. Witt's going to be fantastic. You just mentioned Salvador Perez. If he can hold on for another year, Vinny Pasquantino, you need MJ Melendez to take that step this year. You need Mikel Garcia to take that step this year. And if you can have four or five of those guys playing well at the same time, you can win 91 games and really be a threat in the American League.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, what are the odds that all of them will figure it out or get to the level that you know, we would love? I don't know that you would think all of them will. I don't know how to guess which one is going to. Look, if they all do great, but if any one of them take off, then that's a huge bonus. And then when they don't, you got to fill in those pieces. I mean, if Hunter Renfroe, who slimmed out and you know, he had a bad year and some injuries and things like that, if Hunter Renfroe is a little bit more of what was expected, then that becomes a game for you. I agree with you on Kyle Isbell. I mean, Isbell's going to provide his value on defense, but if you get more on offense, then that could be a bit of a game changer. Mikel Garcia, you know, is he at third? Is he at second? Is he in center field? He has the versatility. He has the athleticism. You know, what does it look like for him to take next steps? And he's a younger guy. I think the reason why, for me, I look at MJ on top of that list is that when you look at, for me at least, when you look at the ceiling for all of those players, I think he has the highest ceiling. And I also think he has maybe been at the lowest level of all of them in terms of not reaching that potential. So I think the gap between the lowest that he's gotten and how high he can get is probably the largest. I think he's got the most ground to gain and maybe the most ability to do that. That's why, to me, my mind keeps going to him. Because you've seen it, too, in stretches. When he gets hot, he can win you games, and he can carry you for games at a time. It's still there, and now it's a matter of can it be there on a regular basis. But everyone, I mean, to me, Massey seems like he's the one that might be the closest. And the question on him, you know, in his early years has been the health of the back. But I think, to me, of all those players, Massey's the one that you maybe feel the best about. But I still think MJ's the game changer.
Joel, we'll get you out of here with this. We haven't talked about the bullpen a whole lot in this conversation. Who are the three guys that you trust the most in the bullpen? Let's say they have high leverage situations this weekend. They want to get off to a good start against the team that won the division last season. Who are the three guys in that bullpen you trust to lock things down?
I've got three and a bonus. My three are, obviously, Lucas Ursek. He earned that last year. He's new to us, but Carlos Estevez, we saw him a little bit more with Anaheim, maybe than with Philadelphia. But I love the fact that they went out there and said, okay, we lost out on Anthony Santander. We don't have the outfielder we want. We've liked Carlos Estevez. We've got the money. Let's go get him. So they went out there, and for me, in Estevez, if he's your, I mean, look, we know Q. He's gonna go matchups. So, you know, for the fantasy baseball fans out there, just be aware that this is not your traditional, like, every day is gonna be this guy's. But I think that his being able to close at a high level then enables you to use Lucas Ursig as that fireman that can get more than three outs. And so if the middle of the lineup comes up in the seventh or eighth inning, that's probably where you're gonna see Lucas Ursig. But those two don't have to be the only two. I think a little bit of an X factor, well, two X factors, but a little bit of a really intriguing piece for me there is Angel Serpa, what he's been able to do from the left side and starting to mature and still very young, and the sinker that he's throwing. I mean, he just has some stuff that I don't think it's the right comparison to compare him to, say, a Kelvin Herrera, but he just has some really unique stuff and throws hard, and he's putting it together at a young age, and I think that he's earned a lot of trust from them. So that's to me, maybe the third guy I would list. But then the X factor plus one is Hunter Harvey, and that's really easy to be like, yeah, but that guy didn't do anything, and, you know, we traded a prospect for him. Well, he was hurt pretty much from very early on from when they got him, never saw it. But this was a guy that was either closing or setting up in Washington and throwing hard, had great stuff and good numbers. You're not asking him now to be the ninth inning guy, although I think you could. But if he's healthy and he is what they thought he was, now you have 3 to 4 closers. And I'm not at a point where I'm ready to label them HDH, but I think we all know that you need 2 or 3 of those guys. And so I think the verdict on Hunter Harvey is we don't know just because we haven't seen it. But because we haven't seen it doesn't mean that he's been a bust or bad. It just means we haven't seen a healthy Hunter Harvey.
That is Joel Goldberg joining us on the show today to get you ready for baseball season. This time tomorrow on 96.5 The Fan, you will not be hearing my voice. You will be hearing the soft sounds of Denny Matthews calling opening day. Joel, great stuff, man. I appreciate you popping on today, man. Joel Goldberg just didn't want to say bye to me, Rob. Just had no interest in it. Just, no, I'm done. You're done with me, I'm done with you. Text Joel. I'm imagining his phone just dropped out there. Text Joel and tell him that I am thankful that he had time to pop on the show today. Shout out to Joel Goldberg. You guys will be seeing him tomorrow on the broadcast. All right, Rob, I wrote this down. It popped up in my head while we were talking to Joel Goldberg. I know that you and I have different food opinions, and that's perfectly fine. I'm allowed to like things that you don't like and vice versa. You know, we all have different palates. We all have different tastes. I still don't know if I've recovered from some of the very mean and hurtful things that you guys have said on this show about Dippin' Dots. I don't know if I'll ever recover because Dippin' Dots are amazing. They're the ice cream of the future. But you know what? I'm willing to look past that for this segment. With all of our different opinions about food and ballpark food and those things, can we settle in that the one thing that everybody loves is the Frosty Malt? Oh, I love the Frosty Malt. On a nice 80-degree day with the wind at your back, when you see that Frosty Malt man come around, hey, come here real quick. Hey, let me get one of those. Now, I don't get that little wooden spoon. I don't get that little tongue depressor. No, I'm not using that. Give me the regular plastic spoon. But, man, I love a Frosty Malt. I also like the little frozen lemonades that they have out there, the little Minute Maid joints that come in the cup. Either it's the regular lemonade or the pink lemonade. I don't care. I'll take either one of them. Rob, can we at least agree everybody likes the Frosty Malt? There is not a person listening right now, 913-586-7965. You don't like the Frosty Malt? It's got to be 100% approval rating.
I think the malt itself does, but for some reason they serve it like it is the only thing on human earth that is served with a wooden spoon. Like it is the Depression era, 1920.
I'm not using that spoon.
Yeah,
I mean, it ruins it.
It absolutely ruins it.
It ruins it.
If you are a person who doesn't take the effort to go find the actual spoon somewhere else in the K to fix that problem, I could see it not having 100% because the wooden spoon is what they hand you. And it's just so bad. It's the worst.
I love it. I'm a big fan. Someone says, I can't stand the Frosty Malt. I just get a cold beer. Well, I like the beer too, but I also get some of the other treats. I get some of the other treats. Yeah, sometimes I go out there and you know what? I just get a bag of the Topsies popcorn. Sometimes I just want some of the cinnamon popcorn. Sometimes I go out there and you know what? Hey, I kind of in the mood for a brisket nacho today. You got to go around the ballpark. You got to try some different things. I'm certainly not excited about giving them $16 for this Miller Lite. I'm not thrilled about it. I just gave you guys $18 for a Michelob Ultra. I'm not thrilled. I'm not fired up about it. I'm seeing pushback on the Frosty Malt. Just, I don't know. Is there anything that we agree on? You think?
I mean, apparently not.
People hate on the Frosty Malt?
I would have never guessed.
It's not the best thing out there, but it's a good thing.
No, it's not the best thing out there. But if like, let's say you and I were at the game and I was like, hey, can you bring me something back? If you brought me the Frosty Malt back, I'm not upset. Yeah. I'm not mad you got me the Frosty Malt.
There are things that if you brought me, I would be mad. That's not one of
them. Like, if you got, now, I'm not saying these are bad, but if you brought me back the little chocolate-covered strawberries, I would kind of look at you like, okay.
That's an odd pick.
And, like, we're grown. Like, please don't bring me back cotton candy. Like, why did you get me cotton
candy? Cracker Jacks, I'd look at you weird.
You're right. Nobody likes Cracker Jack. I don't even know why they offer it at the ballpark.
It's because it's in the song.
We need to change the lyrics then. I mean, we've done a good job in the last 20 years rewriting history. That's something that we need to rewrite. We need to change the lyrics to take me out to the ball game. Because don't nobody go to the ballpark and be like, hey, can you give me some Cracker Jacks? No, I don't want any Cracker Jacks. So that's a mediocre snack. All right, Rob, coming up on the other side, we're going to play a game. I'm going to ask you about a baseball movie, and I'm going to ask you, you only have two choices. Is it a watch it or skip it? We're going to do that next. Keep right here, so Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, we're going to get back to serious baseball things coming up at the top of the hour. But before we do that, in typical Drive fashion, let's combine sports with movies. Now, Rob, I don't have any interest in getting your thoughts and opinions on Bull Durham. It's a phenomenal movie. We all love The Sandlot. We all love the OG Major League. I don't want to talk about those movies. I have a question first, and then I have five movies that I want to get your opinion on. Is this a movie that you are going to play or pass? First, is Moneyball a classic? Would you consider Moneyball to be a classic sports film? You know what a classic is. Bull Durham is a classic. Major League, White Men Can't Jump, Class Hoosiers is a classic. Is Moneyball a classic?
Yes, Moneyball is a classic.
You know what I just learned this week? Did you know that Jonah Hill's character does not exist in real life?
Made up, yeah. Or he's a combination of a bunch of different people that worked for the organization. What's the term? He's an amalgamation. That's what he is.
How can you believe anything if they just made up Jonah Hill's character? He's a very important... He was the one really doing the work!
To be fair, you like Remember the Titans, right?
Oh, nothing in that movie happened. I don't even know if racism happened after I watched Remember the Titans. I'm like, this whole segregation thing, they made it up. I don't even know if it really happened after learning more about that movie. All right, you have Moneyball as a classic. Yes, right? Moneyball's
absolute classic.
All right. Now, this is separate. This is a separate thought. This is, would you play or pass it? The Rookie.
That's the Cubs one, right? Or is that Rookie of the Year?
That's Rookie of the Year.
Okay.
Rookie of the Year is where Henry Rowengartner breaks his arm. The rookie is where Dennis Quaid is the old man who's a science teacher. And then it sounds like a pass. You ain't really fooling with the rookie or not.
It's a pass.
This is my issue with the rookie is I've just seen this. This movie is just Invincible, the baseball version. It's the same concept as Invincible. It's just done worse than Invincible.
Yeah, you care about the character less. It's a nice story, but yeah, who cares?
Angels in the Outfield.
Do you know how many stars are in that movie, by the way, in hindsight? Like, looking back at it, when we were kids, we didn't know that. That movie had Tony Danza. That movie had Danny Glover. That movie had Matthew McConaughey. That movie had Adrian Brody. And the kid is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah. Like, mind-boggling how many stars. I didn't even miss her. Christopher Lloyd, the guy from Back to the Future, is in that movie. Star-studded. Pass.
Oh. How do you do all of that? And then you're going to tell me that's not a movie you're turning on.
No. It's not great for me. It's not bad, but like, if you were like, hey, we're watching Angel of the Outfield, like, tomorrow, let's say, like, hey, let's go to the office, watch a baseball movie before we go to the game. If you're like, I got Angel of the Outfield, I'd be like, yo, I got to work.
But you know what, though? I think if you have a 12-year-old nephew or niece or cousin that is trying to get into the game,
Yeah, well, that's a different demographic than me.
I think that showing them Angels in the outfield is a good thing to do.
I think if you're looking for something to do with your kid on a Saturday.
I'm not hating on Angels in the outfield the way that you're hating on Angels in the outfield. I'm going to give Angels in the outfield a play. I actually watched that recently, like maybe like a year and a half ago. That counts as recent in this. And I was like, you know what? Angels in the outfield makes you still feel good. Whenever Maggie adopts those kids, you're excited.
I mean, it's a feel-good Disney story. I just don't think it's a very good baseball movie.
Would you watch the OG Bad News Bears? Not the Billy Bob Thornton one.
Yes.
The original one.
Yes, the original Bad News Bears I would watch. I'm not going to be like, this is the greatest movie ever. But that one's a classic, so yes, it's a watch.
Do you think Bad News Bears is woke?
No? Do people think that?
I mean, it's a girl that comes and saves the boys' baseball team. They couldn't make that movie today. Y'all would be mad if they made Bad News Bears today.
Does that mean Little Giants is woke?
I'm simply asking a question. That's a good question. Is Little Giants woke? Is actually a good... We should do that topic. Girl playing football, equally as good as the guys. Just as good. Yeah, no. Good point. All right. Mr. 3000.
Oh, no. No. We watched that for the podcast.
You're a hater.
I mean, rest in peace to Bernie Mac. He has a
lot. You don't want to watch T-Rex Pennebaker?
He has a great catalog. That ain't in it.
I'm watching anything that got Angela Bassett in it.
I forgot she was in that.
Yeah, I'm watching anything with Angela Bassett. What about Fever Pitch?
Fever Pitch is odd because I don't think it's actually a base. I would say no, but you know what it is? It's a great, hey, your girl wants to watch a rom-com, but you don't. And there's enough sports to keep you locked in, but I still wouldn't watch. I'd still pass.
I don't mind Fever Pitch. I actually kind of like Fever Pitch.
Also, I have a question for you. This is like a 10,000-foot question. If you were, would you have done that movie if you were Jimmy Fallon? He's a diehard Yankee fan, and he signed up to do a movie where he's a Red Sox fan.
They paying?
That's foul work.
You're just asking, are they paying?
If I said, hey, I want you to be in a movie, but you got to wear KU gear for 90 minutes, would you do it?
Are they paying?
I mean, I think he got paid, I assume.
How much? That's what I'm wondering. How much is the payment? There's definitely a number. Yeah, I would do it if that's what I had to do.
I would definitely not be caught dead in a movie about my love affair for the Missouri Tigers. No.
You're telling me if they cast you alongside Anna Kendrick, you're not willing to pretend you're a Missouri Tiger fan?
No. There are lines we don't cross. You're a Yankee fan, Jimmy Fallon. You're going to be a Red Sox fan. And now people...
Don't nobody love baseball that much to not be in the movie with Drew Barrymore.
Also, let's not like... Drew Barrymore says, okay.
How about Major League 2?
I actually don't mind Major League 2. I don't think it's as good as Major League 1.
Major League 2 is fun.
Major League 2 is fun. Mostly because Randy Quaid is fun. Oh my God, the Wild Thing is back. Yeah, I'm a yes on Major League 2.
I think Major League 2 is very funny. How about Summer Catch?
That's the...
That's what Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jessica Biel.
Yeah, and he's like the... Was it Northeastern Maine Baseball League or whatever? Yeah,
he plays for the Chatham A's.
No.
And the Cape Cod League.
No.
You know I love a 2000s rom-com. I love Summer Catch. I might watch that tonight to kick baseball season off.
Then it has like Matthew Lillard, Jessica Biel, and Freddie Prinze. That movie was peak 2002.
Matthew Lillard was basically Evan Longoria in that movie. That's who he turned out to be in real life. Evan Longoria was great. And then Freddie Prinze Jr., he was like Cole Hamels is who he turned out to be. That's actually the real life story of Cole Hamels. You know what? There's actually a lot of decent baseball movies.
I think baseball has the largest catalog of any of the sports. Like, you couldn't do a full 10-minute segment on football movies. We'd run out.
We could probably do a lot of basketball ones.
Basketball's close.
Yeah, there's a lot of basketball movies. What was the last good baseball movie? Was it Moneyball?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but they're actually still making good basketball movies. Hustle's really good. Better than most of these movies on this list that we've named. Hustle's a good movie.
Hustle's really good. Hustle might be Sandler's best work. As an actor,
That's Sandler's best work.
It's not his best. It's not the most.
Tonight, Caroline wants to watch a movie. You watching Uncut Gems? Or you watching Hustle?
I don't want to have a panic attack, so I don't want to watch Uncut Gems. Nothing is more anxiety invoking than that film.
I would wonder, hey, what happened at work today? We'd have to have a real intervention if you want to get off work to watch Uncut Gems for the second time. I would imagine you had a pretty stressful day at work. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.